Hello, Peter King. Good to see you.
Twin Pauls.
Yes.
How are we?
PA in charge.
Is it going to be a good year at Target Field?
Well,
tell me.
You are as obsessed with Miguel Sano as the most ardent Twins fan.
I need to know if I'm going to draft Miguel Sano in about the 11th round.
11
of my draft.
You need to go sooner than the 11th round. I think his ADP is closer to the 8th round.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, this is the identity of fantasy sports.
What about Park? What about Byung-ho Park? What are we going to do with him?
Total wild card, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? We know so little about him, I think you'll learn a lot more.
You know what? He's the Carson Wentz of the Minnesota Twins. He's beaten up on secondary competition.
That's really, you know, what's interesting.
Sano, 35 home runs. So you figure it out from there.
So, you know, the Red Sox, who I follow, have signed a lot of, you know, both Cuban guys. They've signed two Cuban guys, really. And, like, so they're very disappointed so far in Rosny Castillo. You know, they thought he was going to be kind of a 2020 guy. Mm-hmm. And his power just really hasn't been there. And who knows if he's going to make it. But the problem is with these guys, to get them, because there's so much intense interest, you got to pay them like $7, $8, $10 million a year.
It's crazy.
And you really don't know. It's all speculative.
Yes.
That's the thing that is so troubling. And so that I look at a guy like Byung-ho Park and I just say, I have absolutely no idea what he's going to do. And I bet he goes undrafted in a lot of leagues.
He could be your last player taken and just try him as a flyer. We had the Twins general manager on not long ago, and we asked about Park, and even he didn't know that much. He said, my scouts tell me, you know, they like all these things about him. And here they paid an enormous amount of money to have the rights to bring him in. And even the GM doesn't know what he's going to get.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with Byron Buxton?
I don't know what to do with him. I can't rely on him. I don't know what to say.
Right.
I'm fascinated by him. But I think he's going to be he's either going to be hit or miss. I don't think he's going to be a mediocre player. I don't think he's going to be Aaron Hicks. I think he's going to be either good or, you know, in a year and a half, he's going to be a career AAA player. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. That's just my guess.
Peter King, Sports Illustrated, NBC's Football Night in America.
From a fantasy standpoint, Byron Buxton could be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, he can deliver you across a lot of categories.
Yeah.
You know, steals, on base. He should be able to hit for a little bit of power. I mean, if he stays healthy and fulfills the potential, he could be a fantastic.
You know what I just did in our league? We basically protect three guys from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
So my toughest decision this year was about Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
And I decided to protect him, you know, as one of my three. And my reasoning is that I'm counting on his upside, because he did so well last year in his first sort of full year everyday player. And so those are the kind of guys I need to see a little bit. And I feel bad about Buxton. I not that I've given up on him, but I just sort of feel like, man, I thought he would have shown me more than he did.
Well, and he needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other part of it. They got to get 140 games out of him this year.
Peter, is the Monday Morning Quarterback website in its fourth year?
We're going to enter its fourth year this year. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember you're kind enough to join us every combine.
Yeah.
And I remember when you were starting Monday Morning Quarterback, we sat in the same spot across from you.
Yeah.
And you were exhausted and so overwhelmed with the advertising part of it.
Yeah.
Are things all squared away with everything?
Pretty much. But here's the thing. Advertising is a never-ending saga. As you may know.
In radio,
It's a never-ending saga. And so I have to go out this spring, and people have to re-fall in love with us.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's sort of how it is. But I kind of enjoy it, because for years, I never really had any idea of how the business exactly worked. So I think it's good to have to see that. And I'm not saying that. I mean, I like 4 or 5 days a year of going to do that. The first year I was out 19 days, and that was too much.
You were exhausted.
Yeah.
One of the most recent pieces you wrote at the Monday Morning Quarterback site was an indicating why you think the NFL should give the New England Patriots their draft picks back. What's that all about?
You know, I thought, Paul, that that last year when the NFL announced that they were going to inspect the footballs at a selected number of games, I thought that was a mistake because I thought they should have done it at every game.
Mm-hmm.
To really find out what happens to the air pressure in footballs. So what happened was they went out and did it in a select number of games. I don't know, 20 or 25, no idea how many. And then they didn't publicize it. They didn't tell what the results were. And then Roger Goodell goes on with Rich Eisen at the Super Bowl and says, oh, we only did that just to make sure, basically, that nobody was cheating.
Yeah.
That nobody was letting air out of the footballs. Well, what lame brain would be stupid enough after you've penalized a quarterback four games, suspended a quarterback four games, taken a first and fourth round pick and fined $1 million? Who would touch a football? Nobody would. So that was idiotic to me. So, and then I just said, hey, look, the NFL had its chance to prove to the public that 1.2 pounds per square inch in each football doesn't come out of the ball when it's really cold and windy and wet outside. They had that chance. They failed. So in my opinion, they haven't proven their case. They haven't proven it at all. And I think the Patriots should get their picks back. Will they? Absolutely not. But I think they should.
One of the things that we talk about every year, and thank you for joining us virtually every year at the Combine. It's always good to catch up.
We save the best for last.
Yeah. I love to talk to somebody who's on the inside of the Hall of Fame voting process.
Yeah.
Can you do a dramatic reenactment of the 10 seconds of Brett Favre?
It was 8 seconds.
Eight seconds. Yeah. How did that go down?
It reminded me of the time when Joe Montana was up and the San Francisco delegate said something to the effect of Joe Montana and sat down. It was pretty much something like that. Yeah. But, I mean, look, Favre, it's almost a shame that we couldn't spin yarns and tell tales about Favre. You know, I mean, some of the things that over the years that I've done with him, I mean, shoot, I'll never forget walking off the field. I was working for NBC, walking off the field with him after he breaks the touchdown record at the Metrodome.
In Minnesota?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And,
Jennings.
Yeah, and then I interviewed him for NBC right afterwards. But the thing I'll always remember about him, and the thing I always will think about him, is that the reason why I think so many fans got so attached to Brett Favre, even with his foibles, even with the drugs, even with the texting of photos, even of all these things, I think the reason why people sort of fell in love with this guy over the years is that there's a lot of people who are sitting in the stands and watching on TV who said, that is how I would play if I could play football.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would emote if I could play football. That's what I would do. John Randall levels me with a sack. I'd get up, I'd slap him on the rear end, and I'd say, hey, man, great play. I mean, that's how you really want your heroes and you know, to be. And again, you know, they're flawed, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I'll never forget about Favre, I remember when he wanted to come back in 2007, and he was determined that he was not, or 2008, whatever year it was. And so he, in 2008, he didn't want the Packers to sort of force him out. I am in his house in Summerall, Mississippi, right outside of Hattiesburg.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Saturday night. And he basically had, Buzz Cook and Deanna are in the house, and I'm with them, and we're talking back and forth. And I just said, hey, listen, Brett, this is my feeling. Ted Thompson is not releasing you. You're not going to play for the Vikings or the Bears. That's not going to happen. And he goes, well, we'll see. We'll see. And Buzz Cook was talking like, yeah, don't worry. Just keep, you know, press your case, everything like that. They'll release you. You've done too much for them. And I just said, I left there and told him, I said, look, I'm not trying to be the bad guy. I'm trying to be the realistic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Thompson's not releasing you.
Right.
Yeah. And that turned out to be correct. And that, to me, I'll never forget that, because he had to make that decision. When he made that decision in March that he wasn't going to play anymore, he was not ready to make that decision. Favre is the kind of guy who, and it's not like he wants to be romanced or wine and dine. He needed 5 months to get away from football. And Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson basically were tired of that.
Yeah.
Tired of that, of basically having the franchise
in limbo.
While he decided. And so, I mean, shoot, we could talk for 3 hours on Favre, but that's one of the things I remember. The one last thing.
Yeah.
One last thing I remember. You know, I'll never, ever forget the night before he went into rehab for Vicodin. He had to cancel a golf tournament that he had asked me to go and play in Biloxi, Mississippi. And so, but he still wanted everybody to go to the golf tournament. And he was going to the Menninger Clinic in Topeka, Kansas the next day to try to kick this Vicodin. And it was the most amazingly open guy I ever met. And he goes, yeah, everybody says, I always say, boy, love to have your job. Love to be you, man. I'd love to be Brett Favre. And he goes, how'd they like to be Brett Favre now?
Right.
Addicted to Vicodin, you know, going into rehab, beat up, you know, feel like crap every day when I wake up. I mean, how would they like that?
Yeah.
That's who he was.
Yeah.
He had to say things like that. And, Paul, I have to say this. I thought of you.
Uh-oh. Because of Vicodin?
No. I thought of you when on our site, Sage Rosenfels wrote the story about being Favre's teammate and looking back at the championship game in New Orleans where Favre comes to him on the sidelines after throwing the play that prompted the most memorable call of your life.
Jeez.
And he said, hey, Sage, I choked.
Wow.
I choked.
Yeah.
I mean, and I thought of you because later, after that whole thing happened, and I listened to your call, I remember telling Mike Florio, I said, oh, my God. Paul Allen's in pain right now.
You can hear it.
You could hear it.
Yep.
You were dripping with pain. But I thought of it because when Favre said I choked, I think we kind of saw that.
We have to stop having memories like this. Because January 10th at 7 in the evening, I'm looking at my phone after a playoff game and Peter King's calling me. And I'm like, okay, what's this? So, of course, I take it. And then you didn't know what to say after Blair Walsh and the walk-off loser, the 27-yard kick.
I felt awful for you.
And you just said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Because you feel it. You, more than any other play-by-play guy, you know who you're like? You're like Myron Cope was with the Steelers.
Wow.
Right? Okay?
Thank you.
That's a compliment.
No, because really, when you think about it, you tell me, what other guy in the United States who does your job? Leads with his team. I mean, I don't know. But
thank you.
I'll hand it to you, Paul.
Yeah.
Because I hear all these calls. You know, you sit at NBC and you're hearing all these calls.
Yeah.
And, you know, you exult with the team and you also beat the crap out of them when necessary. And that means to me, if I'm a Vikings fan in Duluth or wherever and I'm listening to the game on the radio, I know that I'm going to get what you really think. I mean, and I just, when I listen to you, that's what I think. I think I'm hearing somebody who's telling me the truth.
Speaking of the Minnesota Vikings, 11-5 division champions on the fast track, do you like where the team's heading?
First of all, in my opinion, when I look at the Vikings, I look at, and this is a weird guy I'm going to mention to you. I think of Danielle Hunter. Danielle Hunter. I always call him Danielle. But I think of him because when you think about it, what do you want out of your head coach? You want a guy who's going to take a flawed player. He entered the league last year, Hunter, and the coaches at LSU probably were not very complimentary about Hunter when in the pre-draft process. He hadn't had a good college career, really an underachiever.
Yeah.
And what happens? Just like he did with Michael Johnson in Cincinnati. He takes him out of Georgia Tech. I think it was Georgia Tech.
Yep.
And he makes him a pass rusher. And again, I'm exaggerating. These guys have talent. They do, but Mike Zimmer figures it out.
Yeah.
He figures out how to get good things out of his players. And that is why, and I always thought this for years. Parcells used to tell me this about Zimmer. He goes, he's going to be a really good head coach. Somebody's got to give him a chance. And I said, how do you know? He goes, I just know. He knew.
Yeah.
And I think what I really like about Mike Zimmer is that he reminds me of the old sort of the statement that Bum Phillips made about Don Shula. He'll take his'n and beat you, or he'll take your'n and beat you, or whatever that weird thing was. But just give him players, and he'll figure it out, and he's going to beat you because he's a really good coach. And I'm so happy for him as a person, because nobody paid dues the way he did when no one would believe in him. And one last thing about Zimmer.
Yeah.
You tell teams right now who are on the fence about whether they want to do Hard Knocks, and you look at the Cincinnati year when they did Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, Hard Knocks raised Mike Zimmer's profile to the point where I think that really, really helped him get a job. Because if you watch that, you say, oh, my God, I want to play for Mike Zimmer. And I want my guys to play for Mike Zimmer.
2 minutes to go. Last one for Peter King.
You know, one of the indications that I got that Zimmer was going to be a good head coach when he got the job, damn near every Bengal on the defensive side of the ball was tweeting and talking about how much they were going to miss him and how overdue this was.
Yeah.
And you just don't see that. I mean, that's just not something that you normally get.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, I feel bad for us, but man, is this overdue.
It's a lot, you know, it's a little bit like what happened with Hugh Jackson this year.
Yeah.
You know, when he got the job, I mean, Andy Dalton really was going to miss Hugh Jackson. But I think that's a great way to tell how guys really feel about a coach, you know. A lot of times you see coaches get jobs and you don't see anybody on Twitter.
No, lamenting.
That's an interesting point. Interesting point.
And, you know, give Marvin Lewis may not get enough credit.
Right.
I mean, look at all the things he has developed in his time there.
Agreed.
And the coaches that he's helped matriculate. I mean, I don't think Marvin's given enough credit for that.
Well, Marvin Lewis, I think, is an underrated coach. And the reason that he's underrated is that Mike Brown basically says to Marvin Lewis, I'm going to hand you a pile. Sometimes I'm going to hand you a pile of crap. You got to figure it out. I'm going to hand you Vontaze Burfict. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
He's a good player. Make that show up on Sunday and then figure out the rest of the days of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I got Chad Ochocinco. You figure it out. He helps us win. So, and you know, after a while he didn't. But I think Cincinnati is a very, very interesting model. Because Marvin, on the other hand, takes his assistants and he goes, you guys go do your job.
Yeah.
I'm trusting you to do your job. I love Marvin Lewis. I'm one of the few guys in the media, in my opinion, who has great, great respect for Marvin Lewis because he lets his own guys do his job and he forgets all of the crapola out there. He just he lets people deal with it.
And look what it's done. Jay Gruden, head coach.
Yep.
You know, and Zimmer, head coach. And now Hugh Jackson, so obviously it's working.
It's over?
It's over.
It's
That's
over.
It. Our two-day combine
you mean,
run.
Wait a minute. You mean until next year?
No,
we
we're
going to
call
again?
You. We're going to call you every week so you can share stories.
Good.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, guys. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Peter.
Peter King closes Combine Day 2 for 9 to noon.